the show where the truth always wins and the news is never hidden. This is a Christian show, so we will always start with the Word of God. And I have to tell you, this week, it's been a busy, busy week for me, so I apologize. The show is not going to be as long as I usually have it. I'll go until I run out of news, and that's it's not that there isn't news, it's that I have not been able to put the show together like I usually do. It takes me hours to put it together, and I apologize for not having that time today. So let's start with the scripture. 1 John chapter 1, verses 2 to 4. For the life was manifested, and we have seen it bear witness, and show unto you that eternal life which was with the Father and was manifested unto us. That which we have seen and heard declare we unto you, that you also may have fellowship with us. And truly our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. And these things write we unto you, that your joy may be full. Well, here the true purpose of John's first epistle is revealed. If the reader learns who Jesus is and what he has done through John's sharing of the good news, the readers can share in his fellowship with God Almighty in the persons of the Father and the Son. Verse 4 here seems to say it all. They are missing something. They are missing an element of joy in their lives that John wants to grant them through the sharing of good news of Jesus Christ. How many friends, neighbors, and more have kept silent from sharing the great and glorious news of God, of this God who loves them? Think about that. Are you one of them? How many have we not told so that they can be safe and comfortable in having less joy? So as I wrote this, I admit, I'm also guilty of this sad crime against humanity. I've kept quiet, yet I have known some could not shut up. One young man I knew came to Christ at a drug rehab center. His life had been filled with what he had thought were reasons to be happy. He had girls, drugs, and money. He was willing and daring. This guy was daring to take on anything. He was athletic, good-looking, and the envy of most his age. But when he found Christ, the excitement level can only be described in terms of a river of water life springing up from within, overflowing with joy. He had no choice but to share what had changed his life. I grew up with this young man. He was, in many ways, a friend. I shared the good news of Christ with him, but had been punched and knocked down time after time. Until that day, he returned with joy overflowing. Yes, that day, all of a sudden, we could fellowship. We could fellowship with God, rejoicing in the wonder-working power of Christ's blood shed on the cross for us. This young man died unexpectedly a short time later. I still remember his mom's call and her cries. My own heart was shocked. It was a little sad, but my soul rejoiced that this friend of mine was with the Savior he loved, the one he couldn't stop talking about. When I think of him, I want to be as bold as he was. I want to share this love that rejoices from within. I'm not sad, but glad for his life that is changed. He was changed to glorify God. Dear Lord Jesus, please work on me, work on us, Lord, to be like your apostle John, Lord. Make us into one whose love of you never forgets to share your love at any chance given. Lord, take away my silence. Put in its place a quest to bring the lost sheep back to you. Lord, I feel small and inadequate to share your word. Grant me boldness and opportunity. Use me that others may hear of your great love. In Jesus' name, amen. So today I am going to do a memorial for Kurt Westergaard. I've only done a few of these, and I really don't have a lot of desire to do memorials. Cal Fritzy is one of the great hosts that bolstered Global Patriot Radio and Radio Jihad Network before it. She was a personal friend of mine that I got to know and had visited her a couple of times up in Canada. A great woman. And then there was Phil Haney. Phil Haney is one of the great patriots this country has ever known, one of the greatest patriots. We will never know. We'll talk about him someday again. But I want to tell you about Kurt Westergaard, who died this weekend. Kurt was one of the few and one of the brave who spoke his mind and told the truth. And today I'm going to talk to you about why he was one of my heroes. Now, I wrote about Westergaard in my latest book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. He believed in satire and much more. I'm going to play a couple videos by David Wood. He did three videos to memorialize Mr. Westergaard. Kurt Westergaard is a man who... he stood on what he believed. I won't say he did it without fear. I won't say he did it at all times boldly. He did what he believed was right. And that is the job of all of us, regardless of what you believe, regardless of who you serve or where you are. Doing what you believe is right is one of the things every human should be doing. Now, Kurt Westergaard is probably one of the boldest men I know of. So with that said, I'm going to play two videos by David Wood, and then I'm going to talk more about why Kurt Westergaard is one of my heroes. Just bear with me a second as I get this screen up. Here we go. Just take me a few seconds. That's the joy of live TV when you don't have anybody else to run a room for you here. Okay. Don't know I could do it a different way. Got a lot to learn still. And this is part of the joy of doing things on your own. You get to try and do new things. And now I can't find the video. Hold on just a second. I got to figure out where it's hidden. All right, let's see where it went. And come on. The joy of trying to find things. Let's see. Okay. It is in a folder within a folder. That was not bright. Okay. I did something backwards. Okay. And I'm just going to move the microphone so you can hear this. You're on the... So here we go.
Some of you are too young to remember the Danish cartoon controversy of 2005. Back in 2005, the staff of the Danish newspaper Jyllands Posten became concerned about their self-censorship when it came to Islam. They noticed that they had to tiptoe around any issue involving Muhammad, the Quran, or Muslims. They were free to discuss or criticize or even mock just about anything else, but as soon as the topic had anything to do with Islam, they had to impose a strange kind of censorship on themselves. In an epic course correction, the newspaper published a collection of 12 cartoons, several of them featuring Muhammad. The most iconic Muhammad cartoon was drawn by Kurt Westergaard. Westergaard's cartoon wasn't meant to portray Muhammad specifically, but Islamic terrorists in general. But it became the most popular Muhammad cartoon of all time. Kurt Westergaard is now dead at 86. Let's make sure we all remember the stand he took for free speech. From the New York Times, Kurt Westergaard, the Danish cartoonist whose 2005 caricature of the Prophet Muhammad, always good to know that Muhammad was a prophet, wearing a bomb-shaped turban, touched off violent protests by Muslims, prompted a massacre that left 12 people dead at the offices of a French satirical magazine, and made him a target of assassins for the rest of his life, died on Wednesday in Copenhagen. He was 86. His family announced his death to Danish media on Sunday. No specific cause was given. Mr. Westergaard was one of 12 artists commissioned by Jyllands Posten, a self-described center-right newspaper in Denmark, to draw Muhammad as you see him. The newspaper said the Muhammad cartoons, as they came to be known, although some depicted other figures, were not intended to be offensive, but rather to raise questions about self-censorship and the limits of criticism of Islam. Mr. Westergaard said that when he drew his cartoon, he was seeking to underscore his view that some people invoked the prophet to justify wanton violence. He later explained that the bearded man he had depicted, with a lit fuse protruding from his turban, could have been any Islamic fundamentalist, not necessarily the founder of Islam. Still, many Muslims were outraged because they believed that any images of the Prophet, much less one provocatively connected to terrorism, are considered blasphemous. Let me guess, since someone associated your Prophet with violence, you're going to respond with a bloodbath. Am I right? In 2006, Danish embassies in the Arab world were attacked in riots that claimed dozens of lives. In 2008, three people were charged by the Danish authorities with threatening to murder Mr. Westergaard. 2 years later, a Somali Muslim intruder armed with an axe and a knife penetrated the cartoonist's home in Aarhus, though it was equipped with steel doors, bulletproof glass, and surveillance cameras. At the time, Mr. Westergaard and his five-year-old granddaughter were cowering in a fortified bathroom. The intruder was shot by the police and later convicted and sentenced to 10 years imprisonment and deportation. Big, tough terrorist picking on an old man and a little girl over a cartoon. Way to show them that there's no connection between Islam and violence. In 2015, three Islamic militants stormed the Paris office of the magazine Charlie Hebdo, which had reprinted the cartoons, and killed 12 people, most of them staff members. In an interview with the National Post of Denmark in 2009, Mr. Westergaard expressed disappointment at the reaction to his cartoon by many newcomers to his country. Many of the immigrants who came to Denmark, they had nothing, he said. We gave them everything, money, apartments, their own schools, free university, health care. In return, we asked one thing, respect for democratic values, including free speech. Do they agree? This is my simple test. I don't think they agree, Kurt. The article goes on, but let's read a couple of quotes from Kurt Westergaard. I want to be remembered as the one who struck a blow for free speech, he once said. But there is no doubt that others will instead remember me as a Satan who insulted the religion of a billion people. I do not see myself as a particularly brave man, he told The Guardian in 2010, adding, but in this situation, I got angry. It is not right that you are threatened in your own country just for doing your job. That's an absurdity that I have actually benefited from because it grants me a certain defiance and stubbornness. I won't stand for it. And that really reduces the fear a great deal. Kurt Westergaard said he didn't see himself as a particularly brave man. And I think he was right. He was born in the 1930s, so he saw a lot of bravery in his lifetime. It's not that Westergaard was especially brave. It's that we live in a generation where almost everyone in any position of power or influence is especially cowardly. When cowardice is the norm, anyone who's willing to stand up for something suddenly seems like King Leonidas. The darker the nights, the brighter the stars. Now, who's going to take his place?
Now, I want to say that this work is outstanding that Kurt Westergaard did. And I think it's important to understand that this work is so exciting this was done almost two decades ago now. His work will probably stand until the end of time. I think it's that important. With that said, I want you to hear why I think it's important. And David Wood did this, so I'm just going to share this next video too.
Okay. Joy of sharing. Share. Here we go.
I was watching a video of a speech given by the late Danish cartoonist Kurt Westergaard at the Danish Parliament building in 2015. He was talking about his infamous Muhammad cartoon, and he made some interesting points about satire. He set up his discussion with a simple observation.
Satire is loved, but also hated.
Benny told a story about U.S. President Jimmy Carter and Soviet General Secretary Leonid Brezhnev in the 1970s to illustrate the difference between people who love satire and those who hate it.
The American President Jimmy Carter and Brezhnev met, and they came to a discussion about these cartoons in the newspapers. So Carter said, I like them and I collect them. I actually believe that I can learn something from them. I have two bookcases filled with cartoons. Brezhnev answered, I'm a collector also. I collect cartoonists. In fact, I have two camps full of them.
Some leaders and one religion are more terrified of satire and mockery than they are of careful analysis and refutation.
I sometimes believe that the mighty ones on earth fear the critical cartoon more than they fear analysis of their regime, their situation, because the drawing has an appeal that no analysis has.
Think about Islam. You can write book after book after book challenging Muhammad's claims and proving that he was a false prophet, and you probably won't be in much danger. But if you get artistic and satirical, like Salman Rushdie with the Satanic Verses, or Theo van Gogh with his film Submission, or Kurt Westergaard with his drawing of Muhammad, suddenly someone has to die. And someone apparently has to die, no matter how generous a nation has been.
Denmark has received a large group of Muslims and given them everything that the Danish welfare state has to offer, from money to accommodation and free education. The only thing we ask in return is that they respect our democratic traditions.
But there's a huge misunderstanding here. When Muslims see someone mock their prophet, they think that they're being attacked or oppressed or excluded. Westergaard saw things quite differently.
When we satirize Muslim fellow countrymen, this is not an act of exclusion, but rather inclusion in Danish society, consistent with the way we satirize Danes in general.
When we make fun of Muhammad, we're treating Muslims like we treat everyone else, because we make fun of things in Western society. Westerners who try to protect Muhammad from criticism are the ones who are telling Muslims, you're not really part of what's going on here. When we make fun of Muhammad, we're telling Muslims, we expect you to live by the same rules that the rest of us live by. We expect you to be civilized, because we all have to be civilized if civilization is going to work. When politicians and journalists insist that Muhammad is off limits, they're not honoring or respecting Muslims. They're accusing Muslims of being barbarians who are incapable of living by the same rules as everyone else. It's called the soft bigotry of low expectations. Politicians and journalists try to shield Muhammad because they don't think that his followers are able to function like normal people. They're the ones who are excluding Muslims from society. Ironically, then, those of us who openly mock the most obvious false prophet in history are showing respect to Muslims by not tiptoeing around their fake prophet, by not treating them like children, by not excluding them from the party. So I say to all of our Muslim friends, stop pretending that we're your enemies. Your enemies are the people who are striving to dehumanize you. They claim to be your friends, but actually they think of you as their pets. You're not pets. You're created in the image of God. With that image come certain responsibilities, among those responsibilities is the responsibility not to slaughter people for making fun of the most obvious false prophet in history. Respect the cartoonists. They're trying to protect you from people who are trying to degrade you.
Think about that. I mean, what does that mean? How is it so important? How is it that it's so important to tell the truth? And when you do tell the truth, you get threatened. You get your life threatened by telling the truth. I often have people ask me, have you been threatened? Has your life been, do you fear for your life? And my answer has always been the same. I serve the great and living God. He gives me armor for my front, and he's got my back. Well, that's the cool thing. If God's got your back, what do you have to worry about? Something to think about. But Kurt Westergaard, I want to read you, I put a portion of his book. Now, he has a book out there, and I do recommend you go look for it, but I put a portion of his book, a section of his book into mine, quote, I should say. He wrote this. John Leckegaard also had information on how Carl Westergaard's cartoons caused a worldwide uproar amongst Muslims. Now, actually, this is from John Leckegaard. I apologize. He wrote, one of the most important reasons for the cartoon-related unrest in the Middle East in 2006 was that Imam Raed Halal from Brabrand and Aarhus suburb and Abu Laban from Copenhagen, among others, went on a tour of the Middle East to draw attention to the cartoons. To ensure a successful result? Well, that was success against Kurt Westergaard. No. It was success against anyone who dared to draw a picture that might have Muhammad in it. Again, if you were paying attention, it wasn't Kurt Westergaard's intention to draw Muhammad. He was simply drawing a person who represented Islam and terrorism. That was his intention. It was a question. Why is this happening? Why is no one noticing? So, let me continue. To ensure a successful result, they brought along other drawings and images. The images, which at first was perceived as the greatest insult against Muhammad, was a photo from a pig squealing competition in France. What? How does that fit in there? That wasn't even part of the cartoons that were in question. A pig squealing contest can be insulting to Muhammad. Well, it doesn't sound like he's got much to be scared of. All right. Wow. It depicted an innocent mechanic wearing a pig mask. The Reverend Muftis and Imams were properly deceived, but the tour was a success in the sense that it led to a boycott of Danish goods. Now, this publisher, this is where I continue. The publisher and this cartoonist had their lives and businesses threatened. Because Sharia forbids pictures of Muhammad, people forget that Islam teaches that Sharia rules the lives of Muslims and non-Muslims. That's what it is. In Islam, Sharia rules your life, whether you like it or not, according to Islam. It rules the lives of Muslims, that's for sure. But in their belief structure, Sharia rules your life as well. So even though you might not believe it, that is what they believe, regardless. Middle East Media Research Institute took note of how the Muslim community around the world had become informed about a few cartoons. Excuse me. And my dad's phone. I gotta call him back. All right. That's my dad. I'll call him right back. It's one of the few people I would generally open just put on. One of these days, I'll see if I can get him to say hello. Okay, Middle East Media Research Institute took note of how the Muslim community around the world had become informed about a few cartoons in the Netherlands newspaper. They captured some of what was being said. Muhammad Fota, who wrote in the evening supplement of the Egyptian Government Daily, wrote, "The Muslims worldwide, some billion and a half are facing a new kind of crusader war whose weapon is the pen, not the rifle." Memory also noted that in the report that a lot more people got involved because a well-known Egyptian singer, Sha'aban Abd al-Rahim, wrote a song about the cartoons in the Netherlands. Oh, so somebody wrote a song and made somebody important because it was a cartoon shouldn't be that insulting that it scares people. Memory documented leaders of al-Qaeda stating their thoughts on the issue. Bin Laden released a tape on April 23, 2006, where he demanded that the Western government hand the cartoonists who had defamed the prophet over to the Muslims so that they could be tried according to Sharia law. He stressed that anyone who mocked the prophet or Islam should be killed. On May 15, 2006, Sheikh Abi Yahya al-Libi, another leader of the terror group, said that the Muslims should talk less and do more. They should fight Denmark and Norway and not be content with demonstrations and other forms of protest. So these threats continue. Did he change his thoughts? No. In fact, if anything, what happened afterwards proved his thoughts and his questions more and more important. His questions: Islam and terrorism. What's going on here? Well, why are people afraid to ask that question? I have serious, if you're afraid to speak the truth, something's wrong. This is one of the reasons why I consider him one of my heroes. Kurt Westergaard never gave up. He was with his 5-year-old granddaughter one time when he was threatened. He never gave up. I want you to think about the impression that leaves. It's crazy to think about some people who give up. They get scared. They're fearful. This man died at the age of 86. He never gave up. He always, always, always dared to speak the truth. Why are we not doing that today? That has me drastically concerned. Too few people standing up. I'm particularly targeting Christians when I say this. What kind of a faith do you have if you're afraid to stand up and say what is true? I have serious questions about your ability to walk the walk when you can't even stand up on your own two feet. Now, I say this in all sincerity. I'm tired of people who play namby-pamby games and call themselves Christians and won't stand up. They'll go to these CRT, they'll allow their children to go to schools where CRT is taught. Oh, what is that? CRT is where they teach your children to look at each other by their race. And then you start to differentiate who has privileges and who doesn't. Who's supposed to be oppressed and who isn't oppressed? Oh, so this concept of oppressed and oppressor, where does that come from? Communism. But that's really what you want your children learning? And you call yourself a Christian, you're going to allow this to happen in your schools? Are you not paying attention to what's happening around you? This is happening in almost every school district in America, thanks to the people currently in the president's office. Oh, did I say President Biden? I don't blame him for anything. The man has dementia. All right? He does and says what he's told to do. We are the idiots that are allowing someone to control a man with dementia and portray him as if he has all his faculties. Something is seriously wrong with a country when that happens. I am disgusted. And why do I say that? When you know someone with dementia, you will understand. It is disgusting, and it is elder abuse is what I'm seeing with Joe Biden. It is nothing less than elder abuse. There are people designated to protect the elderly, and they're doing nothing in respect to Joe Biden. Why am I saying that? And why is it so important to me today? More and more important to you. Because the people who are playing Joe Biden's game, who are telling him what to say, let me get into this one. There's news this week showing how badly our problem is with Joe dementia serving as president. It's even worse when you hear that someone in the office of the president and his staff are speaking against the Bill of Rights. Yes, you heard me. He and other people in the executive wing are now openly speaking against the Bill of Rights. So what I'm going to do is play another video. Now, Biden was at a CNN town hall where these questions, of course, were planned. And he had planned responses, but he still bumbled and fumbled. Not good. What really bothers me is that he spoke against your Second Amendment. He spoke against your rights guaranteed under the Constitution I want you to think about that. He spoke against your ability to own a gun. He spoke against your ability to own a handgun for your own protection. He's speaking against your ability to decide how many bullets you should be able to have in that gun. Starts with the number 20. But he talked about getting rid of handguns. I want you to think about that. He mentioned handguns when he was talking about, it shows you he has no clue as to what he's talking about. It shows you he is truly a man with dementia. But let me look this video up and give it and share it with you. I'm extremely concerned seeing these things. I'm wondering what can we do to stop this elder abuse of Joe Biden? Because that is nothing short of elder abuse. This is just disgusting. And it does nothing but make me angry. Here we go.
Actually, crime is down. Gun violence and murder rates are up. Guns. I'm the only guy that ever got passed legislation when I was a senator to make sure we eliminated assault weapons. The idea you need a weapon that can have the ability to fire 20, 30, 40, 50, 120 shots from that weapon, whether it's a 9mm pistol or whether it's a rifle, is ridiculous. I'm continuing to push to eliminate the sale of those things, but I'm not likely to get that done in the near term. So here's what I've done. The people who, in fact, are using those weapons are acquiring them illegally. And so what happens is I've gotten ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. I have them increase their budget and increase their capacity, along with the Justice Department, to go after the gun shops that are not abiding by the law of doing background checks. For real, that's number one.
You just heard a president of the United States speak publicly about taking away your Second Amendment rights. Does that concern you? Well, it gets worse. It gets worse. What am I talking about? Well, this week, Jen Psaki, the press secretary, works for Joe Biden. She used her platform as press secretary to promote censorship of the American people. She went so far as to state the government is now flagging Facebook posts they consider misinformation and are demanding that Facebook remove these people, not just the post. On top of this, she claimed that when you get removed from social media, you should be denied access, not just to Facebook, to all social media. But don't take my word for it. Here are her comments. I want you to pay real close attention to this.
Go and the joy of putting things together. And here we go.
misinformation. Has the administration been in touch with any of these companies, and are there any actions that the federal government can take to ensure their cooperation? Because we've seen from the start there's not a lot of action on some of these platforms.
Sure. Well, first, we are in regular touch with these social media platforms. Increased disinformation research and tracking within the Surgeon General's office. We're flagging problematic posts for Facebook that spread disinformation. We're working with doctors and medical professionals to connect to connected medical experts who are popular with their audiences with accurate information and boost trusted content. There are also proposed changes that we have made to social media platforms, including Facebook, and those specifically are four key steps. One, that they measure and publicly share the impact of misinformation on their platform. Facebook should provide publicly and transparently data on the reach of COVID vaccine misinformation, not just engagement, but the reach of the misinformation and the audience that it's reaching. That will help us ensure we're getting accurate information to people. This should be provided not just to researchers, but to the public, so that the public knows and understands what is accurate and inaccurate. Second, that we have recommended, proposed that they create a robust enforcement strategy that bridges their properties and provides transparency about the rules. So about, I think this was a question asked before, there's about 12 people who are producing 65% of anti-vaccine misinformation on social media platforms. All of them remain active on Facebook, despite some even being banned on other platforms, including Facebook, ones that Facebook owns. Third, it's important to take faster action against harmful posts. As you all know, information travels quite quickly on social media platforms. Sometimes it's not accurate, and Facebook needs to move more quickly to remove harmful violative posts. Posts that will be within their policies for removal often remain up for days. That's too long. The information spreads too quickly. Finally, we have proposed they promote quality information sources in their feed algorithm. Facebook has repeatedly shown that they have the levers to promote quality information. We've seen them effectively do this in their algorithm over low quality information, and they've chosen not to use it in this case, and that's certainly an area that would have an impact. So these are certainly the proposals. We engage with them regularly, and they certainly understand what our asks are. So a couple of the steps that we have that could be constructive for the public health of the country are providing for Facebook or other platforms to measure and publicly share the impact of misinformation on their platform and the audience it's reaching. Also with the public, with all of you, and provide transparency about rules. You shouldn't be banned from one platform and not others if you afford providing misinformation out there. Taking faster action against harmful posts. As you all know,
I want you to think about that. We just had the press secretary of the United States of America, just speak for censorship against your constitutional right known as freedom of speech. She's speaking against freedom of the press, because when you put something up on Facebook, that means you are publishing. Oh, or you put something up on a social media, you are publishing. Because they consider themselves a platform for publishers. Oh, so they don't have the right or legal right to remove your posts, unless they violate other people's freedom of speech, is what it comes down to. Or they're threatening. Or they are what is deemed hate speech. The problem is, who decides what is hate speech? Is telling the truth hate speech? Under Jen Psaki, telling the truth can be hate speech or deceitful. Her problem with COVID-19. Okay, she would have had a problem with us saying it came from Wuhan. Oh, well, then all of a sudden she's wrong, and it's now been determined it's from Wuhan. Oh, okay, so she would have banned you not long ago from telling the others that, and now she is, okay, we can let it go. So the truth is only okay if she thinks it's okay. Let's see. Let's go one step further. People who are claiming they have received a vaccination have no idea when they got this shot or jab, whichever you want to call it, that what they were actually receiving was not a vaccination, but gene therapy, an experimental gene therapy. How many were actually informed of that? Could it be zero? How many people were actually informed that they could get blood clots? They could have a stroke. They could die. They could possibly, with the one question that hasn't been answered, they could be rendered infertile. Have they warned pregnant women that you shouldn't have this shot? No. Have they warned mothers of babies who are they're breastfeeding? Have they warned them about the dangers of getting this gene therapy? They should. The death of one baby is far too much. Go to VAERS, go to cdc.gov, download the VAERS data. My suggestion, select those who have died and sort it from youngest to oldest. You will feel disgusted, dirty, and angry. That's how I feel every time I look at it. To think that that is happening in my country, it angers me that the truth is not being told. It angers me that so many people are getting the gene therapy. We no longer should be telling others that are accepting the term vaccination. When people talk to you about vaccination, you need to say, if you're refusing it, which is what I've done, I refuse gene therapy. Wouldn't you? And watch their faces. What do you mean you oppose gene therapy? How can you oppose gene therapy? What does that mean? It's crazy. They don't understand they have received a gene therapy. It's not a vaccination, people. It's an experimental gene therapy. You want to find the truth out on that? Read the Pfizer site. Read the Moderna site where they talk about, when you look up vaccination, that's where they send you. A site that talks about gene therapy. There is no vaccination, according to them. Because when you read their sites, they don't refer to vaccination. They refer to a massive experiment that is nationwide and absolutely illegal according to Nuremberg laws. Absolutely illegal. This is not about vaccination, people. It's about an experimental drug. It is a gene therapy. Gene therapy means they are experimenting with manipulating RNA to do what? You have to ask yourself those questions. It's crazy. And I don't think the doctors who experimented and created this know enough about what they did. You want to find out more? I suggest reading some of the works of MIT professors, reading some of the works of people like David McCullough, and I can go on and on and on. But how many have to die from this? How many have to be paralyzed? How many have to all of a sudden become inept? And I'm talking about people that have actually been on the news. Their families have made the news. You can find these every day. It's not hard. I wish it wasn't every day, but that information is out there. So Jen Psaki thinks you should have your voice, that she thinks you should be silenced if you speak or talk about COVID-19 in a way that she doesn't like, or the way that the government all of a sudden doesn't like. You can't have that opinion. You can't speak that truth if it's truth. You can't do those things without her permission, without government's permission. Are we now coming to a totalitarian state where the government flags your speech and bans it from public sharing? Yes. We have entered that zone, people. We have entered totalitarianism when the federal government decides that they will censor you if you don't share the truth they want you to share. This week, one of those censorships that has actually come up, it was revealed that President Joe Biden, has been using military to move illegal aliens from the border area into several unknown cities, which are undeclared, they're not allowed to talk about, by using of military planes. They're simply picking them up and flying them to several unknown destinations. The military who have been involved in this have been ordered to be silent. And this is something that's been verified. Even Tucker Carlson is talking about this. There's also questions, regarding this. Is this another way that they're increasing the COVID-19 threat again? Because there's a large percentage of illegal immigrants who are coming here with COVID-19. And if they have COVID-19 and they have symptoms of it, from what we know, that is the only time COVID-19 is spread. So if you're bringing people into the country en masse, knowingly putting them out and knowing that they have COVID-19 or may have COVID-19, you are risking the lives of all those others where you are dropping them. But that is okay.
But it must not be talked about by the military.
They're not allowed to express something against illegal acts. This is where I start to have problems. Yet it gets worse. This week, President Joe Dementia is working against, I guess I'd say he's working with, let's put it that way. He's working with the past Muslim president of the United States, Barack Obama. He has now been setting terrorists free from Guantanamo. Oh, have you heard that before? Probably not. Let me read you this article that was in Jihad Watch this week. I wish I could say it was a surprise. Unfortunately, it's not. It is what we expect from a man who idolized or said nice things about a man who did many treasonous acts to our country. I can say that because if you actually do your history and you read what's the events, you will see that as time goes on, that will be revealed. The title of this article by Robert Spencer is Biden's Handlers, Freeing a Guantanamo Detainee Highlights the Confusion and Failure of the War on Terror. Abdul Latif Nasser spent 19 years in Guantanamo prison camp without charge. This was a tremendous injustice and was born out of the confusion about what exactly we were facing after 9/11 in the first place. Bush called it a war on terror, and so we put enemy combatants in a prison camp. In past wars, soldiers who became prisoners of war were generally not tried. They were held until the end of hostilities and then released. But Bush's war became Obama's war and was then transformed by the latter into a war against violent extremism, which opened the door for the identity of the enemy to be shifted from jihadis to white supremacists, a label increasingly used of all non-leftist, labeled increasingly used against all non-leftist Americans. Neither the war against terror or against violent extremism have any definable endpoint. So there was no end for the jihadis in Guantanamo. Keep listening. This is really good. Meanwhile, many former Guantanamo detainees have returned to the jihad. Will Abdul Latif Nasser do so? Time will tell. But was anything done while he was in Gitmo to disabuse him of his jihadist sensibilities? Of course not. That would have been Islamophobic. Instead, he was given a Quran, a book that led him to wage jihad in the first place, in a manner that demonstrated that even the infidel U.S. had exaggerated reverence for the book.
Non-Muslim guards even wore gloves when handling it. Unbelievers are unclean, as according to Quran 9:28. It is entirely possible that Abdul Latif Nasser is even more hardened and determined jihadist than ever before. Now, ABC actually reported on this on July 20th, just 2 days ago. They were talking about how he spent that Abdul Latif Nasser spent 2 decades of a notorious facility, he thought, and thought he might not make it out alive. He said, now Nasser said, I was born again on July 19th. My birthday is no longer March 4th. I was born yesterday on July 19th. Abdul Latif Nasser said in a statement shared with ABC News, I have no words to describe my overwhelming sense of happiness and joy. It's like a miracle after 20 years to be home and celebrate Eid together with my family. On Tuesday, the legal charity Reprieve, which campaigned for his release and provided legal support, confirmed to ABC News that Nasser was reunited with his family in Morocco. Nasser, whose case was profiled by ABC News in 2019, was first cleared for release from Guantanamo Bay more than 5 years ago. He has been detained there for 19 years after his capture in Afghanistan, alleged by the U.S. government to be an active member of the Taliban and then to have trained with Al-Qaeda. Are you catching this? Jihadi, yes. During his time in Guantanamo Bay, he was never charged with a crime. Well, the crime was, you know, what you think, they were detained as enemy combatants. Yes, as Robert Spencer said, usually after a war, we let them go. The problem has been, when you let them go, will they come back and attack you again? This is just crazy when you start thinking about, would you let someone go if they're planning to kill you? And that is the reason they're not letting people go. Think about that. They can't trust jihadis not to return to the war. Not saying that's the right thing to do, but the problem is we're not looking at, you know, we're not defining the issue. This is what Robert Spencer said. If we don't define who our enemy is, we can't win this war. Let's get into this a little bit more. Now, let's see. What do they have next? Let's talk about Canada this week. Again, if you don't know your enemy, you can't win this war. That is the biggest problem we're facing. It is the number one problem we are facing in the world today. We haven't defined who the enemy is who has been attacking us. We haven't defined who the enemy was on 9/11, and we still haven't. Who are the ones who are attacking us for terrorism? We have yet to do that. They have called them extremists. They have called them violent extremists. Does extremists define anything? The answer is no. If you want to watch some old FBI shows, you'll see FBI files and things, that particular video, that TV series, they will talk about violent extremists. But not once do they define what that means. That's a problem. They lump everybody into the same fishbowl. You know, throw in your white supremacists, throw in your jihadi, and they don't have the same beliefs, people. I mean, they might be for the white skin. Muhammad had a white skin, so, you know, but will they, again, if you don't define what people believe, you can't, if you don't define your enemy, you can't defeat him. That's said by Sun Tzu and many other people who have intelligence in this way. I want to talk about an article on a Canadian jihadi. Memory.org put an article out yesterday. It's titled, Daughter of Canadian Jihadi Islamist, Imam Yunus Kathrada, who had been investigated by Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the RCMP, complains about Memory's exposure of her father's sermons in which he called for beheading, he called beheading the French teacher Samuel Paty a filthy excuse for a human being. He prayed that Allah would destroy the enemies of Allah, Islam, and annihilate the heretics and the atheists. He said wishing Christians a Merry Christmas was worse than murder. So she's upset that that's getting reported. Oh, think about that. Oh, it's horrible. It's getting reported. It's horrible. The public are getting to know what we really believe. Well, that's what memory does. And I'm thankful for them. If you have extra cash flowing around and you can throw it their way, please do. It's memri.org. I'm just going to read this article. It says, in an article titled Palestine and the Millennial Muslim Consciousness, published May 22nd, 2021 on muslimmatters.org, Canadian Muslim writer Zainab Bint Yunus reflected on the May 2021 fighting in Gaza, how millennial Muslims in the West have dealt with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict since birth, and how their influence in the conflict has increased. Zainab presents the sermons of her father, South African-born, Vancouver-based jihadi Islamist Imam Yunus Kasrada, whose sermons have been published by memory and has been under investigation by the Canadian Police and Intelligence Service since 2005. My problem was this. If you heard him say these things and you have legislation against hate speech, why have you done nothing? Again, the question is, why have you done nothing? Okay, so it's okay to say these things that we were talking about, right? According to Muslim Matters, Zainab Bint Yunus writes on Muslim women's issues, gender-related injustice in the Muslim community. And did you catch that? Gender-related injustice? Wait a minute. Is that against Sharia? She writes about Muslim women in Islamic history. She holds a diploma in Islamic studies from Aris University and a diploma in history of female scholarship from Cambridge Islamic College, and has spent the last 15 years involved in grassroots dawah, which is evangelism. She was also an original founder of MuslimMatters.org. About the memories exposing her father's sermons, Zainab wrote, I grew up hearing my father bellow powerful words from his minbar pulpit on Jumas, which are Fridays, reminding the Muslims of the situation in Palestine and the horrific evils of the Israeli colonizers. Invoking Allah's curse upon them, he did not mince words ever as a result. She writes, she says, I witnessed the consequences. His videos posted on Memory TV media immediately harassed. Immediately people began harassing us, hate calls and nasty voicemails left on her answering machine at home, and worse, the censure of other Muslims embarrassed by his words, throwing him under the bus publicly to the media and the Muslim community alike. After all, speaking out too harshly meant compromising their popularity and their public image, potential funding, and their comfortable relationship with the same federal security apparatus that spied on our community, she writes. So you're upset that someone shared what your father said because, it might take away your income? Yeah. And this is the sad truth. Again, the Canadians know this. The Canadian Mounties know how dangerous this man is. Let me just read a little bit more. In a 2018 sermon, he said that committing adultery, dealing with interest, lying, murder, are nothing compared to the sin of Muslims congratulating and greeting the non-Muslims as their false festivals, such as Christmas. In response to Memory's coverage of his sermons, he said in May 2020, for those at Memory TV and those who are the enemies of Allah and want to spread that we are making supplications of the Mujahideen, jihad fighters, then I say to you, yes, we are praying for the Mujahideen. In a 2005 sermon, he referred to Jews as the brothers of monkeys and swine. Does that sound like hate speech? It's definitely right from the Quran. And then Muhammad tells Muslims that at the end of time, the rocks and trees will say, oh, Muslim, oh, slave, oh, Allah, that verily behind me is a Jew, come and kill him. Well, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police investigated him for these comments. Were they surprised that, why is no one saying anything? Well, I mean, why is no one saying, okay, it's time for you to go back to whatever country you came from? Well, it's because they're accepting what he says more than they should. These are things to think about. This is okay in Canada, speak like this, I guess. but you would arrest someone for making racist statements. Why not this? Some of these things are so shocking and abhorrent. It's hard to recognize, you know, how it can be done. Well, let's talk about how offensive things can be. This week in the United Kingdom, an independent study of an Islamic boarding school in Yorkshire failed its Ofsted inspection. Independent Islamic boarding school in Yorkshire failed its Ofsted inspection after a book calling for gay people to be executed was found in its library. Oh, in a little, you know, think about that. It's found in their school library. That's something you want children to learn? Well, apparently in Islam, that is okay. Why? Because that is in Sharia, people. It's in there. It's in the Quran. It's in the Hadith. It's part of Islam. So Katie Weston wrote this article, and Tom Pyman, I should say, and this came out yesterday. An independent Muslim boarding school, okay, this is for the Daily Mail, so I should say, an independent Muslim boarding school has failed its Ofsted inspection after a book calling for gay people to be killed was found in its library. Inspectors said the text named Islam on Homosexuality has been stamped as a library book by the Institute of Islamic Education in Dewsbury West, Yorkshire. Ofsted stated, did you catch that? Stamped as a library book for the Institute of Islamic Education. So how many schools is this book in? How many mosques have this book, or masjids have this book? How many schools? Think about it. Ofsted stated in a report that the book included sections on punishment of individuals because of their sexuality and views which contradict the rule of law. Well, what rule of law? Oh, they contradict Sharia. Pointing towards examples, the government department referred to the wording in the text, which said the participants of the homosexual act should be slain, whether they are married or unmarried. It also mentions a paragraph entitled Putting to Death, which included a statement saying that the evildoer should be put to death. When questioned about the book, the head teacher said it will not be should not be within the school's library, but other leaders stated that it was for research purposes. Research purposes. Okay. What are you researching? How to kill somebody? How to kill a homosexual? What you should do to a homosexual? This is what Islam teaches people. And if you think otherwise and you want to defend Islam and you're homosexual, it never makes sense to me. This is crazy. I've met gay people who are defending gay people who defend Islam, and I never understand that, because Islam will have you thrown from a height. Let me keep going. This article says Ofsted wrote, the school does not meet the requirements of the schedule to the Education Independent School Standards Regulations 2014, the Independent School Standards, the national minimum standards for boarding schools and associated requirements that were checked during this inspection. It added the book included inappropriate content, which does not encourage respect for those who share one of the protected characteristics set out in the Equality Act of 2010. Megan Manson, the National Secular Society's head of policy and research, has described the findings as horrifying. Well, really, it's horrifying to say no to people who want to kill you. Oh, let's see. If someone is gay, they're saying they have a right to kill them. Is that something we should put into a library for children? How is that horrifying to deny that? This is just mind-numbing. People are defending that, putting this stuff into a school for children. It's mind-numbing. It's shocking. It's really the thing you want next to your child. I'm kind of mind-numbed when I hear that. I have an article from Germany I want to share, and this next article, It shouldn't make me laugh, but I'm sorry. I am tired of hearing this particular article, this story, over and over again. This article comes from Euronews. A suspect, it's titled, Suspect in Würzburg, a knife attack sent to psychiatric hospital. Okay, suspect. Why did you not describe him in any way? Suspect, that's really bland. Well, okay. Well, the man's a Muslim. The suspect in a fatal knife attack in Würzburg has been sent to a psychiatric hospital, German investigators said. Experts have determined that the 24-year-old Somali man may not be possible to hold him criminally responsible. It might be impossible to hold him criminally responsible. Mm. There were three women were killed and six others, including an 11-year-old child, were injured in the attack outside a shop in the Bavarian city on June 25th. So it's okay. This man can't be punished. He should be sent to a psychiatric hospital. Did they mention locking him up? No. This guy, this jihadi, was shot in the leg by police and arrested after people surrounded him and tried to hold him at bay with chairs and sticks. Investigators said that after the attack that an Islamic extremist here, they use that word extremist again. Nobody defines what extremist is. Motivation appeared likely. Well, why was that? Because he kept shouting Allah Akbar and referred to jihad. So was he a Muslim on jihad? Oh, let's not talk about that. He's got to be an extremist. We can't talk about that because then he would be normal. And wait a minute. They're saying it's abnormal to have those beliefs. They're calling him an extremist. But is that what Islam teaches? They're afraid to talk about this. That's one of the reasons I wrote my book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. I'm going to ask you, if you really want to support my work, please, please, please buy this book. My goal in getting the truth out is so all of you can have the truth. It's time to fight these evils. And part of fighting them evils is becoming informed. I have one more article to share today, and then I'm going to say goodnight. This last article comes from the Daily Mail also. And one of the things I say in my book, and I keep saying over and over and over again, it is that the ones who lose the most from Islam are the followers of Islam, the Muslims. The ones who are punished the most from Islam. The ones who suffer the most from Islam are Muslims themselves. If you follow the news, you'll see this over and over again. This one, rocket-propelled grenades are fired at Afghanistan's presidential palace during Eid prayers as Muslims around the world gather to observe Islamic holiday. At Chris Pleasance, again for Daily Mail. Came out 2 days ago. Rockets exploded near the presidential palace in Afghanistan's capital, Kabul, during Eid prayers this morning as Muslims around the world gathered to mark the religious holiday. Video taken during the prayers captures the sound of incoming missiles and explosions as dozens of people bow their heads in prayer in a central courtyard. Nobody was injured in the attack, which has not yet been attributed to a group. So comes as the Taliban retake vast swaths of territory while the U.S. withdraws. Is that a surprise? No. We knew this was going to happen. Eid al-Adha, or the Feast of Sacrifice, which coincides with the Hajj pilgrimage, Hajj is the word for pilgrimage, is typically marked with mass gatherings the world over and the sacrifice of animals with meat given to the needy. Celebrations were noticeably larger than during the Eid al-Fitr holiday, which marked the end of Ramadan earlier this year, which came amid COVID lockdowns, but were muted compared to pre-pandemic years as government asked worshippers to be considerate amid the spread of the Delta variant. Think about this. And the ones most targeted by the Delta variant, according to Europe, those who have been vaccinated. This vaccination, what does it protect you from? Please tell me. Yeah, tell me. I'm waiting to hear that one. Well, again, I keep saying the ones who suffer the most from the followers of the ideology of Islam are Muslims. Keep praying for them. Keep praying that they find Christ. That is the way they can know peace. That's the only way. That is the only way. I want to say thank you for listening. I apologize for not having more to share today, but that's what I have, and I'm just going to close out the video portion of the show. Bye, y'all. And I'm going to go stick with the BTR for just now. And I want to play, just close this out. I want to get to BTR. Hi, Annie. Nice to see you're here. Wow. I have to say, I have not been able to use Firefox at all with BTR. I gave up trying. The only thing I've been able to use is Chrome to use with BTR. I gave up about a year ago trying Firefox, if not more. Back, I think it was even before I had a show, I was having problems with Firefox. That was my predominant choice. And I moved away from that, unfortunately, because of I couldn't use many programs with it. Thank you, Eric, for joining us as well. I am tired of people not standing on what is true. I'm going to ask that if you're listening, pay real close attention to what was said about Westergaard. Be that man who stands up. Be that woman who stands up for what is true. It's time to do that. It's time to stop being namby-pamby. It's time to stop being willy-nilly. It's time to be that person who stands up for truth. Jen Psaki won't be happy. She might get you banned from Facebook, and if she has her way, she'll have you banned from all social media. Did you listen to that speech today that I shared with you? If not, please go look up Jen Psaki and censorship or Jen Psaki on freedom of speech. She's interested in removing your ability to share what you think is true. Is that important enough for you to stand up and say, hey, no more? I will never stop being shocked with the people who think that these actions are acceptable. They're willing to say, well, he's not Trump. She's not Trump. Oh, nobody mentioned Trump. Why did you bring it up? These are the things we need to do. We can't allow this insanity to continue. How do we stop this stuff? Well, people, it's time for you to stand up. You're going to have to figure that out. Find out what you can do. I will tell you that in my community, one of the ways to stand up is by simply going to, because I live in Libland, New York, the governor here has decided that all college students must be vaccinated in order to go to college. Okay, again, the truth of the matter is he's not asking to be vaccinated. He's asking you to get an experimental gene therapy. He's demanding it. Not telling you that you could die from this. Not telling you that you could have serious heart issues, have blood clots. No, they won't tell you those things. That's why there's a very, very important court case right now on the lack of informed consent. You know those nice advertisements they put on TV for ED and other things? All those horrible side effects. Should you take this drug? You know those people who got this experimental gene therapy never heard one possible side effect? One negative thing that could happen? Why is that? Because the vaccination is too important to them. Oh, I'm sorry. The truth is, it's not a vaccination. It is gene therapy. The gene therapy is too important to them. Why is that? Keep asking yourself that question. Because it's a question I think that has to be asked over and over again until someone can figure that one out. I keep trying. I have my thoughts, but I can't prove them yet. So I want to say thank you for listening. Let me just find my favorite song by Toby Keith, and I'll send us off. We have to stand up, people. We can no longer sit down and let things happen. We have to be bold. We have to tell the truth. If you want to follow me, I'm going to say go to YouTube right now. I'm sharing all my interviews there, so you can get just straight to the interview. Please subscribe to the Sutliffian Report there. You can find us on Facebook. We haven't been censored yet. Why? Because 99% of what we share are actual news stories. No one's telling us to shut up yet. Because we use the regular major news networks to share what's true. And if you can find a way to influence the major news networks, which is one of my secret ambitions I'm currently working on, do it. And with that said, here we go. Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue.
American girls and American guys will always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole of the red, white, and blue. Justice will be served and the battle will rage. This big dog will fight when you rattle his cage. You'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining.